Hey, this is Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I looked at Cole to be like, you go first.
I was waiting for Graham.
Sleepy boys on a sleepy morning. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store here.
It's dry.
Yeah.
It's dry in here.
Yeah.
It's mizzy as shit out there. it's movie weather.
Yeah.
This week, I think this whole week is going to be movie weather. So,
but we have to work instead.
No, but it's fine. We're doing the Lord's work here. We're going to help you find something that you can watch.
Yeah. Yes.
If you want to get in your car, it could be at the Bioscope. Otherwise, we very much accept that it'll be at home on the couch. We've got ourselves a G-Force.
Good morning.
A Graham G-Force Hackney, who is an editor and the producer of this podcast. We've got ourselves a Cole Matthews.
Hi.
Who is a copyright, creative copywriter is what we've said.
I think all copywriters are creative. I hate that my job title is creative, but say a video copywriter.
A video copywriter.
Or digital video copywriter.
Digital.
I don't think you need it. I don't think the qualifier is necessary in 2025.
No.
Oh, God. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we gather behind this counter to help you figure out what you can watch. And we always like to kick things off with a little, hey, did you guys see? But before we do that, what are we hoping to chat about today?
Cool.
I saw the Netflix movie, The Woman in Cabin 10.
Okay.
Ooh.
Which I thought was an interesting
one. Gripping title.
Cool. Yeah, it's one of those, like, we'll get into it. But it sits on the same shelf as The Girl on the Train and The Woman Across the Window.
Okay.
And they're all like, they all kind of have the same title. They're all kind of the same movie.
Right.
Well, they're all books that become movies. Mm. But it's a very particular kind of book, which I think is interesting. That's with Keira Knightley.
Okay.
Which is one of the sort of top movies of this last week on Netflix. Coley, I wanted to tell you about Boots. Do you know Boots?
I've heard of Boots. I've heard the Pentagon release a statement.
Which is wild.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll
bring
be
that
very
up in the
interesting.
Meantime,
yeah, please.
Okay, this is a Netflix show about Marines in boot camp, but with a very unique twist, which obviously warrants a Trump-era Pentagon.
Oh, is it like it's a in the Navy kind of twist?
It's more
like Village People.
Oh, yeah.
Macho.
No, somewhat. It's a little more nuanced. It's a little more complex, like and endearing. I liked it. I really liked it.
Cool.
What else do we want to talk about?
I started watching the Apple documentary series, Mr. Scorsese.
Oh,
is that out?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Watching the first two eps.
Lovely. And yourself, Cole?
I started watching Slow Horses finally because a friend told me Gary Oldman's a shit in it, so I decided to check it out.
Yeah, it's been winning a bunch of Emmys
in
its kind of later season.
It's like a show we've all heard of. It's like a Severance. We're just like, but haven't watched, you know.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Should we get into a little round of Hey, Did You Guys See?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to kick things off?
I can kick things off. Hey, did you guys see? Drew Struzan died.
Which How do you pronounce his surname?
Struzan.
Struzan.
Yeah.
It's a goddamn tragedy, man.
Right?
Well.
He's my favorite artist.
Yeah,
I remember
he's an incredible artist.
Like, Spielberg, there was someone in an interview talking about him saying, like, before you saw the movie itself, you saw the poster, but you saw so much of what the movie was.
Yes.
Who is he?
So he's an artist who is most famous for making a bunch of very well-known movie posters.
Like, iconic.
Like, Star Wars posters, Back to the Future, The Thing, Indiana Jones, Harry Potter. He's done everything.
Yes.
Yeah, it's bananas.
And I think people, when you look back on those posters, so like if everyone can just close their eyes and imagine an Indiana Jones poster, you almost think it's a real life
Right, the airbrushing looks visceral.
Like, it looks like a real-life image.
Yes.
But it's actually hand-painted.
Yeah, yeah, it's all traditional art. There's no, it's not like the modern, you know, floating head Photoshop posters.
Mm. Yeah, so it was a floating head design before you could easily float heads.
Yeah.
So this is pre-Photoshop.
Yeah.
Someone had to composite these elements of a movie in such a way, and it had to be done. And when you didn't have Photoshop, the only way to do it was to paint it, to hand paint it.
Yep.
I remember being 6 years old when the Star Wars re-release came back to cinemas, the 90s re-release, where he replaced the butthole Sarlacc with the beak Sarlacc.
Yes.
And I remember seeing the three. It's a
triptych.
Thank you. Yeah. How did I forget that word? All the time. It's a triptych of the three films.
Yeah.
I remember being the, I remember how impactful that was when I was 6 years old. I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, the Goonies. Especially that famous image of the Goonies when they're all on the rope.
Yeah.
And he apparently...
Isn't it a stalagmite that he's holding onto?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I think it's a stalagmite.
Okay, but they're all holding onto each other like a rope. And he apparently did 5 or 6 different ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With each different character being at the top.
Okay.
Oh, wild.
And then they eventually went with the one we know, which I think is Brolin on the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
Josh Brolin.
Yes.
Did you ever hear the story behind the Thing poster?
Yeah. I think I sort of remembered. Like, he had nothing to go on.
Yeah.
And he did it in like a day.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's one of the most iconic horror movie posters. You're just like, what's this movie about? Yes. No one's told me. And he had a day to make it.
Yeah. And there wasn't really any bands of light coming out of people's heads, but it still did the job.
Yes.
It does the job so well. Because it's just like, it's a thing.
I know when they did Hellboy, the studio rejected his posters because they were like, okay, no, it's gonna be like too expensive to get like a real artist to do it. We'll just throw some stuff together.
Yeah.
So Del Toro paid him personally to make the Hellboy posters.
Seriously.
Yeah. And he didn't, it's like better than any other poster for the movie.
Yeah.
And then he did it, he brought him back again when they did Hellboy 2 and he paid him again to make another poster.
See, studios are
but
dumb,
they were like
dude.
Unofficial, so to speak.
Studios are so fucking dumb every time.
So Del Toro, I just saw something very interesting, little tangent, him introducing a Frankenstein screening.
Oh, yes.
And as he walks off to the clapping, he goes, thank you very much, enjoy the movie, and fuck AI. He just walks
in. Nice.
It's just great.
Yeah, his interviews around it at the festivals have been really enlightening, I think.
Yeah, he started he's formed a stop motion studio.
Oh.
As a sort of an antithesis to AI.
Cool. That's interesting.
Cool. It's cool that something like that's happening.
Nice.
Hey, did you guys see the Bioscope cleaned its screen?
Fuck cool.
Yeah. Stickinical, are you listening? Listen,
yes.
Stickinical Cradlestone.
Please.
Well, yeah. Okay, well, listen, there's a lot of screens out there to clean. The guy I found the number of, it was earlier this year, and I'm not going to shit on him because he seems like a sweet dude, but it took him a long time to come to the Bioscope.
Right.
And by the sounds of it, it's because he was busy. So I don't know which screens he was cleaning,
okay.
But ever since I found, because what I've always known when we first put in a screen is I had someone tell me really early on, you can't just use soap.
Yes.
You can't just use even Windoline or whatever chemicals you think can work. You mustn't touch the screen because it'll look worse if you try and clean it with certain materials. So we've actually just always been very careful.
Mm.
And especially when there's like a band, or we've done like queer burlesque shows where there was fireworks and there was fire and like rope women tying themselves up in like rope. We've had weird shit close to the stage. I mean, and close to the screen.
Yeah.
And we always just say, guys, please just don't touch it. And even if your dirty hand touches it, please don't try and clean it.
Mm.
You know, don't think that you should clean it. Just don't touch the fucking screen.
Yeah.
So I realized we've had the screen for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Shucks.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Our first, 10 years.
Okay.
The Bioscope's been going for 15 years. Hmm. Our first 5 years, we projected onto a rhino-lighted wall.
Right.
Just a white wall.
Yeah.
Right.
But what was behind us in Mabuning was the ramp going up to the parking lot.
Mm.
So especially every time cars drove, there was quite a lot of pressure on that wall. So we were seeing cracks that were just forming in the Rhino line. Not that the wall was breaking, it was just that it was never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
So we were a hell of a chuffed when we got this professional screen put in. But yeah, it got its fair share of handprints and dust. And then when I found there's this dude that does it properly, he came out and we looked at it and quoted me and everything. And then it took me months to get him to come out.
Right.
And even when I finally got him on the phone, he's like, yeah, you're a bloodhound. And I'm like, well, to be honest, I certainly looked for other people to do this. But everyone just kept saying, you know, you got to chat to this guy.
Mm.
So he came out and it was just, it's just cool. And I could tell the difference. I don't think your average audience member could tell.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have any like bad marks.
Mm.
But when there was like, I know with Materialists, there was like some title cards to color.
Right.
Like a clear color.
Mm.
And sometimes when it's like a pastel color and also whites.
Yeah.
You then can see this, you can see the dust.
Mm.
But now it's all gone.
Nice.
So I'm chuffed.
Nice.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Well done.
Yeah. And it's just one of those little things. Like, I also felt like, because I was actually at a screening. I'm trying to think where I was. I've watched a few interesting movies recently as an exhibitor. I got this one staff member just to take a photo of it because I was like, I want to share the fact that this has happened. And I was like, I don't think other cinemas will advertise this.
Yes.
But it's important that the Bioscope does.
Yeah.
Because I want people to see that, like, we're excited about this stuff. And it's like,
you're putting the effort in.
It's geeky, but it's it means a lot to me.
Exactly.
Coley?
Hey, did you guys see that Ace Frehley passed away?
Yeah.
This is a member of the band Kiss.
Yeah, one of the founding members of Kiss.
Okay.
Who was in Kiss from, I think they started in 72 to 82.
Yeah.
And he left before the makeup reveal era. And in the 80s, and then came back for the reunion tour in 96. So like 2001, where they're replaced by the other modern members who have been there since. And fuck, he was a great guitarist. He was, I don't know if anyone's ever seen, if you guys have seen the smoke machine inside the neck pickup trick that he would do.
No.
So he would like do a thing where he starts like going faster and faster on the guitar. And then behind the neck, he had a trigger. And then smoke would start coming out of the guitar. He's like, so he's inspired all the guitarists, modern guitarists you've heard of, like Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, John Petrucci from Dream Theater, like anyone who's picked Slash from Guns N' Roses, like anyone who's picked up guitar in the 80s did it because Ace Frehley played guitar.
Mm.
So he's a massively influential rock guitarist. He was like a superstar in the 70s to kids.
And he wasn't like, just show, like he actually was good.
He was good, I think. I remember like seeing the difference between him and the modern guitarist, and I thought the modern guitarist was a cleaner player,
right,
like better technique. But then as soon as that kind of thing happens, it's like he wrote the book and the guy's just playing his fucking solos, you know? So yeah, everyone will know New York Groove from his solo Kiss album when the four of them made solo albums.
I think that was such an interesting move.
Yeah,
because Ace and Peter were going to leave. But they were going to leave the band after Love Gun. I think it was the Love Gun album. And Gene and Paul were just like, no, we got a great thing going. But they were like, you, Gene and Paul, are assholes. We want to leave. It's like, to be fair, because they got session musicians to play over the re-recordings for their first Greatest Hits album.
Oh.
And they didn't ask Peter and Ace to do it. So they were like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's rather all just make four solo albums. And then now you get the four solo albums that have each of their faces on them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, nice little way to give everybody the freedom to do something.
Exactly.
Sometimes I've often felt that in those creative circles, egos and problems and things are sometimes like a sort of balloon that just is expanding to the point that it could break.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to do certain things to deflate the balloon.
Mm. Right.
You know, give someone the opportunity to bow out or say no or, you know, because being in a band is tough in a sense that it can. You often got to put some things under the rug to make it work, to make this, because you're aware that you've got something that's bigger than you.
Right.
And it takes you to create it, but it's not yours. It only happens when all of you are together Yes. It's quite an interesting thing. So you got to put quite a lot of your personal stuff aside to make this thing work, which is why I say being in a band is a little bit, it's somewhere between a coworker and a family member.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's bigger than friendship. It's like a family, it's something like
the band is the baby that you all collectively are responsible
for. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you have to make decisions as parents to like look after this baby and nurture it.
Yeah. No, it's like you've got this sort of it feels like a lifetime of memories and importance and bond. So it's bigger than friendship, but it's not quite friendship. Yeah. It's something more important. But at the same time, you also have to be colleagues.
Yes.
Right.
It's very interesting.
The one thing I want to say about Ace, sorry, is if you go listen to his solo stuff, and especially his stuff during Kiss, where he sang like Shock Me, like all of his tracks have something to do with either being from space or electricity.
Right.
That's all he wrote about. Like the one song's, his solo song's lyrics are, she hit me like 10,000 volts when I saw her face. And it's just like, it was so predictable. Every album that came out, he's like, I'm from outer space. And you're just like, yeah, Ace. Cool, dude. You're 72 years old. Outer space.
Why do you think they replaced some of those guys?
It was like personality conflicts. Because I've read all the biographies.
Okay.
And they just didn't get on. Like, mm-hmm. Paul's complaining that Peter and Ace would always whip their dick out in front of him and be like, see how big it is?
Right.
So there's like literal dick sizing going on amongst all of these like egos.
Who put their dick out?
Peter, Chris, and Ace. Like randomly, like just saying, check it, look at how big it is, Paul. Check it, look at it. And he was just like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Flick it with a ruler. And we'll never pull it out again.
Don't do that again, bud. You'll get fired from the band. That's what happened.
Oh. Oh, God, here's a customer.
Oh.
We've got it.
We have to look do decent. Our jobs.
Look decent.
We've got to do our job here. How's it?
How are you doing, Russell?
Looking yourself, Brett.
Not too bad.
Have you got a movie to return?
I do indeed.
What is it?
It's three movies, actually.
Okay.
It's Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3.
Lovely. Lovely. Did you watch all three?
I did. I did like a marathon type thing.
How long did it take you? Did you do it in one go?
One go. It's amazing. 6 hours. Back to back to back to the future.
Lovely. I actually watched listened to a really interesting podcast about the making of it.
Okay.
And how Michael J. Fox wasn't originally meant to be Marty McFly. And they actually started shooting with another dude.
Did you know about all of that? I do know because you refreshed my memory, but I couldn't tell you who it was. And it was like a last minute change for
it didn't work. It wasn't working. He had the wrong idea of what Back to the Future was going to be. For him, it was more dramatic and tragic, and it wasn't as fun.
Yes.
Where Michael J. Fox is playful.
Yeah.
And fun.
His character, he's him as a person suited the character.
Totally.
So much better. And you're still doing that series in the 80s. And
yeah, Family Ties.
Family Ties, that's
so
it.
So they originally wanted him, and the producer of Family Ties didn't want to let him go, so he didn't give him the script.
Yes.
So he was none the wiser. And then they started shooting, and then they approached him, and he was like, I'll do it. I'll do it. You should also listen to Lucky Man, the autobiography of Michael J. Fox that he narrates himself.
I haven't heard of that, so I'll definitely check that out.
So the book is, you could find it. I think we might even have it on the shelf here.
Okay, cool.
Listening to him tell the story is awesome. And how he was shooting Family Ties and then had to at night go to set and come back and go. And he said he lost fucking all train of sanity and what day and what time it was, because he was doing both at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the like trilogy and a DVD stuff, and it's the old school disc fours, like the commentary over the movie.
Yeah,
and
then
I can't for the life of remember a lot of stuff of it, but it's always cool listening to how the director and the people are talking about, oh, this scene involves this and this is how we shot it. Da, da, da.
And it was just meant to be one movie.
Yeah.
They didn't intend to have it be all three.
Yeah, but it just turned out to three. And what, I don't know, for me, it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, okay.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
I love the Italian.
Hey!
So we thank old Bretty for that. Mm. And we'll have some more in future episodes.
Nice.
another callback to Drew Struzan.
Yeah.
He did the poster for Back to the Future.
Yeah,
all
the
three.
Whole trilogy, yep.
Amazing. Great poster ideas. Hey? Yeah. So simple.
Yeah.
And it worked so well.
Right. Do you think, obviously, a lot of his talent was coming up with, yeah, that design and that idea?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's interesting.
It was like the perfect mix of like artistic talent with like conceptual design.
Mm.
Like the idea to design something iconic, I think, is separate to like the skill of being able to draw hyper-realistic really well. You
exactly.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, should we get on to some movies?
Let's do it.
Let's do
and
it.
Some TV shows.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got The Woman in Cabin 10.
Cool.
Which is like top three Netflix at the moment.
Okay.
This is Keira Knightley, and it is based on the 2016 novel by Ruth Ware. W-A-R-E.
Okay. Ware.
Ware.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
I'm being facetious, sorry.
It's just, I just find it interesting that we're finding a groove with a certain kind of literature.
Okay.
And that they were never going to be these like huge movies.
Yes.
And I think in the old pre-COVID movie era, they would just be filler. They wouldn't be the sort of big tentpoles of studios.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Especially the sort of smaller psychological crime thrillers.
Yeah. There were a lot more of those the 90s.
Yeah. And now they find a perfect place, which is like to be a Netflix mooch movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just think
that makes
like
sense. Like it would be like a flight plan. With Jodie Foster would be like a modern Netflix mooch movie.
Right.
Well, it depends on the epicness of it.
Okay.
You know, if it's just a small Agatha Christie-ish crime thriller, especially when it's got that sort of psychological twists and turns.
Yeah.
The best example is Harlan Coben, the writer, and how he got like a 10-picture deal with Netflix.
Mm.
It's probably a bit better suited as a limited series,
right?
Some of these books, especially the real like meaty ones,
right?
But here we have it compressed in a movie, a very slick looking movie. We got Guy Pearce, Keira Knightley.
Is Guy Pearce the bad guy or the good guy?
I don't want to give it away,
oh,
but
fuck.
there is a baddiness to him.
Oh man, I love Guy Pearce. Okay, this is great.
And she is an investigative journalist. She's done some sort of serious, hard-hitting journalism. And when she's sort of due to take a break, she gets invited on a super yacht in the sort of Nordic fjords.
Right.
Because there is a wealthy woman who is basically on her deathbed.
Right.
And on this maiden voyage of this yacht, they are having a few select guests to introduce this charity and her work, and they want her to cover it.
Mm.
And then people are thrown overboard,
right.
And Keira Knightley starts to lose her mind, and there is a plot, and she is feeling almost gaslit about what's going on, and it's basically a crime, whodunit, but we're all on this yacht, and we don't know what's going on. And there's a lovely twist. It's very cool.
Cool.
It's smart. It's a good old smart mooch. It's a smart mooch.
Okay. Is there a bourgeoisie woman who says, and enough champagne to fill the Nile? Have you seen that guy on Instagram that rips off Gal Gadot
no,
in auditions?
No.
Okay,
that's
well, link it. I'll send it to you, Graham, cool. So you can put it in the description.
That's funny. Hannah Waddingham is the closest to that kind of character, a society lady who's on the boat with
them. We love Hannah Waddingham. For those who don't know, she's the coach from Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
The team owner.
And then there's that other guy who's in a lot of British comedies. He was in Love Sick. I'm trying to think what else he's been in, but you recognize him as the...
Don't worry, I'm Googling
it. Very funny character. And he plays this wealthy, rich kid.
Okay.
The woman in number 10.
The woman in cabin 10.
Right. See, that's my comprehension skills from school just gone out the window as soon as long COVID took my brain away from me. That's my excuse.
But yeah, it's a lovely, especially if it's a rainy Sunday.
Cool.
It's a lovely rainy Sunday.
Okay.
Movie.
It's another shelf we need to make.
Yes.
Rainy Sunday movies.
Rainy Sunday mooch.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'll put it firmly on that.
Cool. Okay, brilliant.
Lovesick is one of those beautiful little hidden gems. You didn't find the guy's name?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so the dude I'm talking about is called Daniel Ings.
Okay.
Okay.
He's been in the Marvels, Pirates of the Caribbean, Eddie the Eagle.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Would we recognize him as a character from a thing somewhere?
He was in a Black Mirror.
Okay.
It's this guy.
Oh, vaguely. He's vaguely recognizable.
He's very funny.
Cool.
Okay. So he's still on his way to becoming that guy.
Yeah, no, he's very much when a character. He's a character actor at this point. All right.
Okay.
Should we get over onto TV?
Yeah,
sure.
I think we've got a bit more to talk about with TV.
Cool.
I want to talk about the fact that for the longest time, which almost feels like months, myself and Leslie were watching Nathan Fillion stuff.
Oh, right.
We watched The Rookie, yes, which was like 8 seasons of that. Jeez. And we're like, what do we do now? And then we started watching Castle, which predated that,
yeah,
which was always so funny because for the most part, it felt modern until you realized this was very much like pre-smartphone 2016 okay, or 2003, 2004, 2005. Every now and again, there was a reference where you were like, ooh, okay, yeah, we dated a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, there was still the occasional flip phone.
Mm.
And then it ended. It's so funny. It ended in such a funny way.
Yeah.
Their big arc of someone that they were wanting to track down and solve, you know, like a multi-episode arc of a bad guy, came to an end, but then there was this like tiny little twist at the end, right in the last 10 seconds, where they both get shot.
Oh.
By this person, and they're lying, and they're lying.
It's Kaiser Soze,
and they're lying on the kitchen floor, and that was clearly scripted and done for them to go into a next season.
Motherfuckers!
But they clearly didn't get the next season.
Oh,
because you know this is how the show ends. So all of a sudden, at this point, it just cuts. You know. 6 months later, yes, or no, like 2 years later, and there's this quick little fucking bandage of a scene where they are now like in a living room together, right, and there's kids, and you sort of see the future of how they're going to be together.
Because right,
the first, the whole show is about him and the woman,
yeah,
and how they form a relationship and they get married, and then they have this okay, kind of troubled marriage because of all the politics of crime solving okay, and all this thing that gets in the way. But just when you think they're both going to die, it was just so funny to see, like, they clearly, someone was like, oh no, you're not getting a new season. Like, we're done now. And they were like, oh, we can't leave these guys dead,
yes,
on the kitchen floor. So they just bolt this little scene. Like, don't worry, they're fine. And they're happy.
It's amazing how often
the
that happens.
The end.
Mm. Oy, oy, oy.
So we are left with a void to fill.
Okay.
As a result.
Why don't you guys watch Firefly?
Well, I think we're done. I think we're a little Nathan Fillioned out.
I don't think it could ever be Nathan Fillioned out.
Yeah, that is a good point. There's He's just majestic. One season.
Yeah, oh, there's only one season and the movie.
Okay, we'll look into it. Mm. But in its place, there is High Potential.
Okay.
Which is on Disney Plus, which is a nice...
Does it have High Potential?
It does. Okay. It does. It's the woman from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Rob McElhenney's wife in real life.
Okay.
And she is a super smart... They always... This is so classic. It's always like, they've got a super smart ability. And so she's one of these people that has a photographic memory. She's super smart. And she is now very similar to Castle, consulting with the LAPD to solve crimes. But she's a kooky. She's her own person, a little bit like Castle was his kind of own person.
Okay.
So Castle was for those who don't know, he's a crime writer, a famous crime author, like a sort of James Patterson type, and he finds himself working for the New York Police Department,
okay,
the NYPD, to help solve crimes because he's just got this great flair for story and understanding of psychology. And then he goes on for six seasons to consult and be a lovable character. In High Potential, because she's so smart, she's almost got this kind of Sherlock-ness to her. She works with the LAPD to solve crimes.
Okay.
Very easygoing. Like nothing too challenging.
Okay.
So yeah, High Potential, I think it's worth your time. It's also a good Sunday mooch. So nothing too challenging and tough, and it's quite episodic, procedural.
Mm.
But what we did enjoy in the last few days, and I'm leaning over to you, Cole, is the show Boots.
Why is it gay?
It has homosexual storytelling and themes and ideas.
I immediately know that Russell's eager to tell me a story. He's like, hey,
well, I
talk
think
to you about this.
I think it's interesting how we make a show like that today.
Right.
And how these stories are being told, and specifically how gayness is represented.
Okay.
Because I think that's always been an interesting discussion.
Absolutely.
Mm. Is that people think in the past to have gay stories is good and helps and builds the world's appreciation, breaking stigma. What's the word? Breaking the...
I think stigma is the right word.
Yeah,
the,
right the stigma word, yeah. around it, building acceptance towards it.
Mm. Yes.
But often, and perhaps you can speak better to this, but often those stories don't help because the gayness and how that homosexuality is represented is kind of seen as an evil or is seen as bad right. or is associated with depression or mental health.
Right. Where so the it's best like thing, the tragic gay story is.
Yeah, the tragicness of it. And so that those queer stories don't necessarily help. The best is if, like I said, there was that one Christmas movie where it just happened to be a gay love story, but there was nothing wrong with it. It was just love.
Right.
You know, and that's what the world needs more and
exactly.
more.
It reminds me of reading an article about problematic trans representation in movies because it's like facing a similar problem. Like, where's the positive representation? Like, they were talking about Rocky Horror, but I was like, come on, that's fine. That's like completely fine. But I was then they said Silence of the Lambs with Buffalo Bill.
Right.
And it's kind of like, okay, cool. Like, the only trans representation in Oscar nominated films that year was a serial killer that would skin women so he could wear their outfits to become a woman.
Exactly.
You know, so it's kind of like, fuck. You know, we but need better stories. So now queer, Boots, you're saying,
so,
is
so what
better
it
representation.
Is, well, to some large degree, what it is it's able to flesh out that idea more.
Okay.
So it is based on a book called The Pink Marine, One Boy's Journey Through Boot Camp to Manhood.
Right.
By Greg Cope White.
So it's a true story.
It's based on a memoir.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Based on a true story of a young man who enrolls himself into boot camp.
Mm.
And the whole show takes place over these weeks of boot camp as he becomes a Marine.
Right.
Okay.
But what's interesting is that, and I hope this gets across to people, is that it's like he's gay without being gay. So he's too young and immature to even understand his feelings, but he knows he is gay.
Right.
Yeah.
He hasn't acted on it because he's still very largely a virgin. Doesn't even understand how it works and how mechanically this could even happen.
Right.
But he knows he is gay.
Okay.
And so that's quite interesting. And it's not someone who's just out and proud and is fully aware of himself. So it's very much a coming of age. He eventually finds someone who is a little more confidently gay, and they both realize, they both make a joke like, how gay are the Marines? Like, if you think about it, it's like we're all showering together. Yeah. There's a point you realize they all just shit together.
Right.
There's no like closed cubicles. You know, it's like, you know, there's this, you're surrounded by, you know, these little shorts and everyone takes their shirts off.
Yeah.
So like, but at the same time, you are reminded, and probably especially when this book was set and written, that to be gay in the Marines was a problem.
Mm.
It was illegal at the time. You would be kicked out if you were found to be gay.
Right.
They've since adopted a new sort of approach, and that's not to say it's condoned. it's just that you can't ask. It's the there's a term for it. It's
called, don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
But it's really still seen as a problem.
Yeah.
And here's this guy making his way through boot camp.
Mm-hmm. My God, the lead actor is 30 years old. He does not look 30.
No, he doesn't at all. He looks like he's 14.
Yeah. Now. What the fucks? You know, Drop the skin routine.
He's meant to be sort of 18. It's got it's got a very kind of spud like energy to it.
Okay.
Where he's this you see a lot through his head, and he plays himself as this other character
who talks to him.
Right.
And he goes into it with his best friend, and he's very largely kind of trying to escape his life,
okay,
like I think many people do when they want to find a path through these avenues, like the army or Marines. It also had me realize what the Marines are.
Yeah.
And it's kind of vague what exactly the Marines are. Maybe you guys know, but after a little mild Googling.
Yeah.
Mild Googling.
It's not, you know, the land force is the army.
Yeah.
The sea force
is
the Navy.
Yeah.
And the Marines are kind of their own little branch that is both land and sea.
Yeah.
What?
That are just an extra force. They're almost like a business class version of those two. They like, but they don't outwardly say it, but people are like, let's be honest, the Marines is
the
army but better.
Yeah.
Or the it's technically part of the Navy. I think it's a wing of the Navy. But I think these things just grow in bureaucracy to their own place, that they almost, it's a bit awkward, and they're almost their own thing.
Yeah.
Right? Have I got this correct?
I think so. But also famously, like that whole Marine boot camp thing is supposedly one of like the hardest things in the world. Like it is tough as hell.
Yeah.
And I think that is an interesting setting for this like coming of age sort of thing.
Yeah.
To place like a gay story in something that is typically incredibly masculine.
Well, what's
and
nice,
supposed to be incredibly grueling.
And what's nice is that the story actually isn't about his gayness. Mm. So let's just be honest. Let's just be clear there for those who are thinking about approaching it. It's not about him being gay. That's just his flavor.
Yes.
That's just like, that's just the sort of shade of color on his t-shirt.
So it's not about that, but that's just who
it's
he
just,
is.
It's just what makes him interesting is that he is going into this world through that lens, but it is not about his gayness.
Okay.
Which I think is a good thing. Because once again, it's just not about that. That's
makes
really
it approachable
cool.
for your
Yeah, it's a part
your
of
normies.
It. Yeah, and it's a part of it, and there's one or two episodes that maybe deal with that a little bit more than the others. But ultimately, it's about finding your own confidence.
Okay.
You know, you also see how you are conditioned in these places.
Okay.
How it kind of brings you together, but it also kind of
erodes your individualism.
Erodes your individualism. Yeah.
That's actually a cool contrast, like the eroding of the individual, but you're discovering the individual in a boot camp full of like masculine buff guys.
Yeah.
There we go. That's it. That's what makes it special. Well done.
Oh, cool.
I love how you kind of
found it. Found the truth. Do you want to talk about the Pentagon statement?
Yes. Okay, I didn't know about this. So what did they say?
So Pentagon Press Secretary Kinsley Wilson said, under President Trump and Secretary Hegseth, the U.S. military is getting back to restoring the warrior ethos. Our standards across the board are elite, uniform, and sex neutral, because the weight of the rucksack or a human being doesn't care if you're a human, a woman, gay, or straight. I don't know why I'm reading it like that.
No,
we will not compromise our standards to satisfy an ideological agenda, unlike Netflix, whose leadership consistently produces and feeds woke garbage to their audience and children.
Obviously, Mr. Potwitz, based on a true story.
Yeah.
Like this is a thing that actually happened. No, it's woke.
Yeah,
this is the problem with like fascists kind of witch hunting.
Yes.
Is they have to find something. They have to find an other to condemn.
There
it's
is
like the green wicked witch of the West.
Yeah,
who is the wicked witch of the West in this?
Yeah.
It's wokeism.
Yes.
The highest ranking person in the story who's looking after these recruits. Who is the person above that, like, drill sergeant? Like,
okay.
wake up, maggots.
Yeah.
Looking, and the choice of language throughout the show is great. Like what they call each other and right. what all those little traditions are. The highest ranking person is a woman, but they make it very clear that she's like, this, I am the first woman to do this.
Okay.
So I don't know whether that's true to fact.
Yeah.
It's interesting to sort of have the highest ranking person in this army barracks be a woman. And then there's a little bit more wokeness right. in one or two of the other characters. Okay. But hey, we need some subtlety, man. We need some nuance.
Yeah.
We need some shades of the rainbow to just make life a little more realistic.
Spicy, you know? Yeah.
No, but also, are you telling me in hundreds of dudes enrolling in the Navy that you're not going to get one or two dudes that are going to be a bit queer? It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, it happens.
We're silly people.
All right. Cool. Do you want to chat about a little bit about Slow Horses?
Yeah. Started because my friend recommended it. My friend, who's a doctor at the Donald Gordon, he really loves his downtime, obviously, because he's doing these like overextended long shifts.
Yeah.
What kind of a doctor is he?
He is a physician.
Okay.
So like Dr. House.
Oh, hectic.
It's like doing all the general shits, right? So it's really fascinating.
Myself and Les have made friends with this woman in our building who is a neurosurgeon.
Right.
She is one of the youngest doctors to be a neurosurgeon in Africa or something. Okay. But it's like, we just know her from like girls' night and when she's come to my birthday and we just see her in the fun casualness. But it's like, her day-to-day must be insane.
Yeah. It's bananas, dude, what they go through. Like, he showed me that he's on like 18 WhatsApp groups, and each of those is like a doctor and all their like attending doctors.
Okay.
And
because they ask each other for advice and
they're just like, this patient has got this problem, and everyone's like, cool, it's this, whatever. And also be aware of this patient, they're critical, whatever, like all these situations that they have to be aware of. I mean, he says like on one day off, he got back to his phone and he had 600 messages he had to go through because he's also attending those patients, right? So if he's on a day off and he has to come back and see the updates on them, etc. So his downtime's really important to him.
Okay. And he's chosen to watch Slow Horses.
Yeah, it's like one of the things he does.
Right.
He has read 50 audiobooks this year,
right?
Which is like nuts from all the driving he does. Like if he's doing anything, he's reading an audiobook. So it's like also...
I love the idea of reading an audiobook.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I've just accepted it. I'm just like, this is the world we live in. We're reading audiobooks. And he was like, Cole, you have to watch Slow Horses because Gary Oldman is incredible in it. So he would say to me the whole time, he's the most disgusting person, this character that you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
But he's so fascinating to watch.
Okay.
And for those who don't know, it's about an offshoot of MI... What's the... I'm thinking Mission Impossible.
MI5?
MI5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so British Secret Service vibes. And it starts off with a character who is on a training mission.
Okay.
And the training mission, like, fails.
Right.
Basically, and a whole bunch of people die, hypothetically, in his training simulation. So he's sent to Slough House.
Right.
That's where all the rejects of MI5 go.
Right.
And they are overseen by this character who's played by Gary Oldman. And he is a vile, like unhygienic.
Yeah, it's very grubby.
Yeah, it's grubby. That's the word. Mm. It's like grubby. And basically this MI5 guy is not going to accept the fact that he's in Slough House and he's still ambitious and he's trying to be a good agent and like maybe doing things he's not supposed to do and trying to find out. It's set like within the scenario of a Muslim student being kidnapped and held by white nationalists, which is like also very interesting considering what's happening in the UK now. And this was made in season one, which was like, what, 5 years ago, maybe? Yeah. So, very interesting. It's like story, good setup. I'm waiting for it to like really kick in, like get into gear.
Because in the last few years, the last year, it's done very well at the Emmys.
Okay.
By its later season. So, it definitely finds its groove. I've always, and I've said this many times, I've always struggled with the secretly assassin narrative, you know, the world of espionage and spies and fucking, it kills me.
Right.
But every now and again, you get one of these shows, because I think you could do it better in a show, where you actually get a sense of what it is like to actually work for the CIA.
Right.
Or these covert missions, and when you realize it's mostly bureaucracy, mostly paperwork, this whole thing is a mess, and it's held together by a piece of string,
right,
you're like, oh, that makes sense. Because like, with lots of love and respect, I've done a fair bit with embassies.
Okay.
And of course, the Bioscope has mostly dealt with the cultural wing of these embassies. But it's like, they don't have money, and there's bureaucracy, and it's like, It's not this high standard that everybody thinks,
right,
and it's not this crazy manipulation. Like, it's a bureaucratic mess out there.
Right.
So it's like they're not controlling the world.
Right.
If anything, you should look to the tech billionaires. They're the ones that are like really shifting the dial.
Right.
They're the secret assassins.
That's right.
We've been watching more of Only Murders in the Building, which is getting a little bit better. This latest season, sometimes you have to find its vibe. And in the beginning, its vibe, you forget, is very comical and farcical to the point where it does feel a little bit silly and a little bit stupid. And I'm going to put this out there. It's a hot take. Steve Martin's fucking annoying. But like, Martin Short's cool.
Yeah.
Selena Gomez is cool. It's like, I could do without Steve Martin, to be honest.
And certainly, whenever Steve Martin comedy pitches up, and it's like he has a masterclass on comedy.
Okay.
On that website, Masterclass.
Yeah, oh, really.
And I always sat there, I was like, of all the funny people you could have chosen, I think
the world thinks he's hilarious.
This is the thing. Like, if you listen to guys from like slightly older generation, guys like Conan O'Brien, the way they talk about Steve Martin, like this, when he started out, the stuff he was doing was like revolutionary in comedy.
Oh, but you look back on some of that stuff now, and it's
yeah,
terrible.
Now,
the
of
one
course,
is like,
but I'm talking about like in its time, it was really important.
The one thing was the shrinking comedian,
and
everyone's got to close their eyes, and then all he does is makes the mic stand bigger.
Oh, right.
And he's like, and open, and then all of a sudden he now looks smaller because the mic stand's taller. It's like, that's the joke.
That's how amazing it is. Yeah. It was like when, for me, it was a dumpster fire when him and Alec Baldwin hosted the Oscars.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
I was just like, none of this is funny. Wow.
But who was the bad guy in Inglourious Bastards?
Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz plays a tech billionaire in Only Murders in the Building.
Oh,
they've got another round of famous cameos. You know, like, it's the only show in the world where you could bring Meryl Streep into television.
Right.
You know, so she's in this show because of the caliber of people.
Yeah.
So Renee Zellweger and Christoph Waltz, and then this other dude who's not as famous, have joined as the sort of the band of villains.
Okay.
The season before, when they were getting their show adapted into a movie, they had a whole bunch of famous folk like Eugene Levy and Eva Longoria and Zach Galifianakis were playing them. So they've had like a host of quite famous folk.
Okay.
It's finding its groove. And of course, the whole thing is it's a whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
So once you are just past the shallow end, you have to carry on.
Mm.
And that's its success, is that you actually want to know who murdered the dude in this season. Oh, G-Force, tell me about Mr. Scorsese.
Yes, this is the new Apple TV documentary, which now, by the way, they're changing the name to just Apple TV. It's not Apple TV Plus anymore.
Yes.
So it's really confusing because you can watch Apple TV on the Apple TV through your Apple TV. They have three products that all have the exact same name.
But they're different things.
It's so weird.
But I guess... They're just trying to.
Yeah, everyone's either this plus or this one.
Yeah.
You know?
Because Apple TV is the product that they sell, the little streaming box. And then it you can get the app, which is called Apple TV, which you can.
Well, okay. Well, I can explain some of that.
Yes.
The box will eventually disappear. The box is a finite thing because most TVs are smart. If you're a smart TV, you don't need the box because then you can get the app on the actual TV. So it doesn't have to be an actual box.
It's very reliant on what software they use, because a lot of TV software is garbage.
Sure.
Absolutely terrible.
And then once in it, I guess we used to think of that as iTunes, but that's now just becoming TV. And some of it you'll pay for.
Yes.
And some of it will be streaming.
Because you can buy and rent movies through it. And then there's the access to...
Yeah.
The streaming service, which is a separate thing.
I'm all for a little restructure if it makes the cupboard neater.
I just think it's confusing.
Thinks this way.
I think the Apple TV will disappear once they start putting some version of that software directly on TVs. when you can buy a TV that has Apple TV OS on it.
You download the app.
Yeah, but I'm saying like the actual the operating system that runs that. When there's an Apple version of that, then they'll stop making the box.
Sure.
Because it's still the best version, I think, that you can get. But we got, getting signed on there. Okay, so Mr. Scorsese is a new documentary series, obviously about Martin Scorsese. It's 5 parts. I've watched 2 so far. They've released all of them. It all came out in one go. It's pretty interesting so far. I think it depends on what you're looking for in this. You'll either be disappointed or you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
I didn't even think about it. I completely forgot that this existed until I opened Apple TV and then I saw it there. And I was like, okay, cool. Let me check this out.
Yeah.
So I didn't even think about it. If you want something that's about his craft of making movies and all that stuff, you're not going to get that. This is about Martin Scorsese, the dude. This is about him, the person. Him growing up, all of his experiences, how those fed into the movies, that sort of thing. It's not about the craft of what
Scorsese makes him
does.
A unique director for
exactly.
those who don't
that's,
know.
That's kind of what it's focusing on.
Okay. Maybe it'll get there in the later parts.
Maybe. It seems to be going chronologically.
Yeah.
So now it's up to, the second episode is up to New York, basically.
Okay.
But I think one of the things that's interesting about it is there's a ton of interviews in it. So Steven Spielberg, Brian De Palma, all these guys have worked with him. But then you also get interviews with guys like Leonardo DiCaprio, who doesn't do interviews, and Daniel Day-Lewis, who doesn't do interviews. So you get these people who you normally don't hear from also pitching into this thing. And then they even talk to his parents, his interviews with his parents, his interviews with people he grew up with. Because he grew up in a part of New York that was right in the center of Italian organized crime kind of thing.
Yeah, the dirty, and also probably the era of dirty New York.
Yeah, very much.
Dudes were giving each other hand jobs in Times Square and stuff.
And he talks about how he would just go out of the street as a kid, and they were just drunk people all over the place.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have jobs, so they were just drinking all day.
Wild.
Yeah, that's the environment he grew up in. But it is interesting. It's interesting getting to kind of see how, it's always interesting seeing how personal experience feeds into movies and their opinions on that, and how his personal experiences feed into Taxi Driver. And getting to hearing him talk about it now, and hearing it contemporary interviews talking about it at the time. There's a little bit of contrast in that.
Wow.
In terms of how he feels about that character and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth checking out if you're a Martin Scorsese enthusiast. Sure. If you're a movie enthusiast, I don't think you're going to get much out of it.
Okay.
But if you care about, if you're interested in Martin Scorsese, definitely check it out.
It's wild. Sorry, this is a little bit of a stoner thought, but it's wild to think about how much you have to do as a director when you are speaking of someone's vision and art.
Yes.
Because if you're a painter or even a musician, you have so much more control.
Yeah.
You can craft it.
Yeah.
And you can also toss it out and do it again and toss it out and do it again till you eventually show this thing. But but to be a director is so much more about fucking keeping your cool, delegating, communicating.
You're
unless you're making these little movies
that
are basically stage plays or
right.
But you're entirely reliant on other people.
Yes.
You have to tell other people what it is you want. The idea's in your head, but you can't execute it on your own if you're a director.
You have to be this
to rely on other people.
You have to be this general of an army, and you have to be able to motivate them, and
you have to be an excellent communicator.
Yeah.
To redirect, going off of a tangent here, it always blows my mind when you hear people talk about how, I don't know how I would die if you hear it talk about staying up for 4 days on a diet exclusively of wine and cocaine, just shooting constantly and doing stuff. I'm I drink a milkshake and I feel like I'm going to die. I don't know how people physically do these things without completely falling apart. It always fascinates me when you hear these stories about people standing for a week just doing drugs and wine at night, either playing music shooting during the day.
Was Scorsese that kind of dude?
He reached the point. Yeah, that's actually exactly the point where it reached now, around the time in New York. It was drugs and alcohol constantly.
Shit.
Interesting. And it's interesting that is what is being said by probably a more authorized story about him.
Because this is the thing. I'm surprised by how frank this is being.
I've got a little theory that the true nature of a band like Led Zeppelin, for example,
yeah,
who famously have got all this craziness. And, like, granted, a lot of it fucking happened.
Yes.
And a lot of it was real, and life is that wild.
Exactly.
But I've got a feeling that a lot of those musicians left the world to create the Enigmas and just were like, yeah, okay, I'm going to be quiet.
Yes.
And if you think I'm a rock god that did all this crazy shit, like, cool. And I reckon it's a combination of two, where they're like, oh, there are some things I'm never going to tell anyone and they will die with me. But then also a lot of bullshit that they've allowed to exist so that they have this cool story around them.
Yeah.
And they're probably not as cool. There's somewhere in between where they were like, we had to fucking sleep.
Yes.
Otherwise, we would have died.
Yes.
So, of course, there were crazy days.
Yeah.
Of course, there were crazy moments. But not as crazy as you're thinking, because the voice had to work the next day. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like there's a, and you can sometimes see it in certain responses from like the Jimmy Pages, where it's like it wasn't that wild.
Right.
But then you probably find they'll tell one story and everyone will be like, "Oh my god,
yeah,
I can't believe that happened."
Yeah. Yes.
Wild.
So it's a weird combination, but I don't think it's as crazy as people think.
Right.
It's also interesting. I'd like to know your perspective on this.
Yeah.
When I watched a lot of Elton John's documentary, Never Too Late.
Okay.
Which is cool because it's only about one period of his life.
Mm.
It was the period where him and Bernie wrote 9 albums in 5 years or something. And they're all bangers. It's fucking incredible.
Well,
And I felt like it was the same thing with the Rocketman movie.
Yes.
Where it's kind of like because the person themselves that the subject's about, they are involved in it in some way, and that kind of neuters any kind of real insights or drama into their life and into the stories, and it just feels like a bit watered down, where it's just like
it's kind of sanitized.
It's sanitized, right?
Well, to some degree, the Rocket Man one was cool because he wasn't afraid to show the depths of, and the vulnerability.
Yeah, true.
Famously, this was the worst case in Bohemian Rhapsody when you had the other people, the surviving members, trying to craft a story about their dead friend.
Yes.
But I want to touch on, specifically because next week, I think we'll definitely get into it more, is the Springsteen film.
Oh, okay.
And what's lovely about Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, is that it is just about this tiny little moment in his career.
Okay.
That says once you watch it, you get so much more about him.
Okay.
I've had a chance to see it, and I really liked it. I thought it was cool. I was never a huge Springsteen fan, but I left it going, okay, I'm so glad I got it.
Okay, cool.
And it's wild of him to have been involved and put a stamp on it and condoned it, because he really does lay himself quite vulnerable in there in the movie.
That's good.
It's all about, he's just made The River, which was really the album that started putting him on the map. He started becoming famous. And just when the world was wanting him to sort of grow on that and build on that and deliver more singles, he ended up making this tiny little personal album, just him, a guitar and a harmonica that he recorded in a bedroom, where the big studios were like, what the fuck's this? He's like, make it sound the same. And they just couldn't. So they eventually just mastered that tape.
Okay.
And that became the album Nebraska, which is one of his sort of deeper dives. It's not a famous album, but it's an important album.
Okay.
And this is all about the making of that album.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so I put a call out to Mr. Vinyl and Vinyl Junkies, which are these great vinyl stores here in Joburg, to start building up a collection of Springsteen vinyls. And I'm specifically trying to get my hands on Nebraska.
Right.
But that's a famously quite difficult vinyl to get.
Okay.
Of course.
But Brett from Mr. Vinyl is bringing in some newer stock, because obviously they re-release this stuff. And we hope to have a crate for the screenings at the Bioscope, which start this weekend.
Okay, cool.
And I also put a call out to them. I was like, who's the biggest Springsteen fan? And Benji said Randall Abrams, the guy who we know mostly as the Idols judge.
Oh, yes.
But he was only an Idols judge because he's spent his whole life in the music industry and is incredible music fanatic.
Mm.
He's a big Springsteen fan. So I've chatted to him, and hopefully we can pull this off. Fingers crossed.
Nice. If not,
hopefully at some point soon, we can have him on the show.
Cool.
A little bit like how we got my buddy Neil to do the F1 episode.
Yes.
So it's less of a guest episode where we talk about him and his career, but more like he can be at the counter with us, just giving us some insights on Springsteen.
Okay, cool.
That's so the hope is to pull that off.
Cool.
So let's just see. Okay. I'm putting it out in the universe.
Nice. Okay, hang on. I want to rewind it, but I don't think you finished your thought.
I did finish my thought. But I was waiting for your response to see like,
well, then what
it
was the
like.
Question?
The question was like, does the Scorsese film like have that same kind of sanitized...
Not really. It's surprisingly like honest. Okay. Seems to be at least based
that's
on
brilliant.
The little bit that we get. Okay. Just talking about, you know, drugs, talking about like his divorces. He's been divorced like 4 or 5 times. Like,
damn.
Yeah, just talking about how it comes up all the time with directors especially is like you can't have your art and family. Like it comes up in The Fabelmans as well.
Yes.
Like you don't get to have both while you're like really in it.
Right.
You know, like they're honest about that sort of thing.
Okay.
But there's still another 3 episodes to go, so I'll...
Because I think being a director is very similar to being a touring musician.
Yeah, in some ways, because it's like...
It's like you will disappear for months.
Yes.
On end.
And like, because they interview some of his kids as well, and they're like, I saw my dad like 2 or 3 times a year. Like, and they're putting that in the documentary, so I think that's...
Sure, okay.
You know, they're honest enough to do
that's
that.
That's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was telling you guys a little earlier that I've got a line on a company that can give us very cool merchandise for the gift shop. And I'm very excited to bulk up our cinematic gift shop here at the Bioscope, especially when you find one supplier that can give you lots of cool stuff.
Yes.
And the one thing that they have is a nice, beautiful coffee table book on Scorsese.
Oh.
The cover looks amazing. So I'm very keen to stock that at the Bioscope. Just for that like one person that like wants that.
Yeah.
Because he's at this point in his life is presenting himself very much like a lovable old grandpa.
Yes.
But I'm sure there were some years where he was a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like George Bush is now this George Bush Jr.
Yes.
Is George W. Bush is now this like sort of old man that paints.
Yeah.
It's like, what about the time when he was invading Iraq?
You're a war criminal, George.
Yeah. And now he's just this old dude that paints.
Yes.
I want to jump in with one more thing that I just remembered I've been watching, and it's why I've been watching series this week, is that the new season of Critical Role has dropped on YouTube.
Okay.
Oh, you love this. What is it again?
So Critical Role is basically a group of voice actors that got together to play Dungeons & Dragons, and they recorded their campaigns. And then those YouTube campaigns became so famous, like with millions of views, 200 episodes that are 4 hours each for one campaign, and now they're on campaign 4. The first 2 have now been adapted into Amazon Prime series called The Legend of Vox Machina, and I think the second one's called The Mighty Nine.
Okay.
So now they're on campaign 4, and it's a big deal. I think, let me just check this out quickly so I don't... like misquote this. Oh, it's got 3.5 million views.
Jeez.
The first episode. And the unique thing about it is that they used to have this core group of like 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
That one guy, Matt Mercer, was always the DM. He's an incredible DM, but we've never seen him as a player.
Right.
And now in this new season, they've brought across Brennan Lee Mulligan, who you will recognize from Dropout
from
TV.
From Dropout, yeah.
And he's been on all those little talk shows that you see on Instagram that are brilliant. Actually, I got a Dropout TV subscription. I would highly recommend it.
Dropout
like,
TV, what is
it? Yeah, Dropout TV. It's like a streaming service that they... It's the guys who... okay, give me a second. I'm just going to...
I think they were at College Humor.
Yes, it was College Humor.
Yeah.
It's amazing how, these social media channels have grown to become legitimate channels. Yeah.
Yeah, and on Dropout TV... they had a Dungeons & Dragons show called Dimension 20.
Right.
And it was a spin-off of that that made Dungeons & Drag Queens, which is chef's kiss. It's so brilliant. But now he's the new DM.
Okay.
And what they've done is they've expanded the amounts of characters that they have.
Right.
So they've got like something like 12 or 16 players. And now they're introduced, and they can only have, I think, 8 players sitting at the table at a time.
Okay.
So they have to ask people to leave, and like you walk out the room, this person walks in, and he's like coordinating this mad dance of all these Dungeons and Dragons characters.
Yes.
But the premise of the show is really fucking cool because always You have to figure out how the different characters in your party meet and go on an adventure and become a team. So everyone does, you meet at a tavern and something goes wrong at the tavern. So you all step in to like sort out what goes wrong at the tavern. But now they all meet at the funeral of a revolutionary hero who was executed by the state.
Right.
And there are all these people who try to like orchestrate an escape for him, but it didn't work out.
Okay.
And like the thing that they, magic rune that they put on him to teleport him out, was replaced by someone and he was actually executed. And now we're just like, our plan failed. Our friend is dead.
Okay.
And now everyone's meeting around those circumstances. And it's a very sad beginning, but it's so much fun, guys. Cool. You have to check it out.
Okay. So where's the first place to start?
So it's going to be called, you go to Critical Role's YouTube channel.
Okay. And then you can watch.
It'll be under a playlist, Campaign 4.
Okay.
But these four-hour videos, what are they? Are they videos of them around a table?
Yeah, videos of them around a table playing. So it's got a split screen. It's got the DM on the left, and then it's got two sides of their triangular table on the other sides of the screen. So you can see like the eight players that are playing.
And would you like... that? In a way, this is just such a perfect thing for 2025 because you do want somewhat second screen material. Mm. Because I don't think you would sit and watch this.
No, you don't sit and watch it. I do it while I wash dishes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure people treat it like a podcast, basically.
Yes.
Something you put on in the background and listen to.
It's just so perfect. I just find it interesting that certain things can thrive at a certain time.
Yes.
And that there was always an appeal for Dungeons & Dragons. I remember someone explaining it to me ages ago, and I very jokingly shat on it when you first started talking about it on the podcast, and I was like, I was outside playing cricket. But I remember someone telling me about Dungeons & Dragons, and I was like, I totally get it.
Mm.
I could totally understand how you would love this.
Yes.
And it would be such a fun afternoon. And also, if you have a kid that gets into it, it's like, this is only going to be good for them. It's imagination, it's communication, it's fun, it's building lots of lovely qualities in a human.
Yes.
It's not mindless. It's
absolutely
it's,
not.
It's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that is thriving in this way.
Yeah.
I think the most fascinating thing is watching these people improvise in their characters.
It's improvisation.
You guys are so good. It's so amazing.
I'll never forget someone explaining what they thought, and I agree with them, is the definition of creativity.
Mm.
It's problem solving.
Right.
Mm. Absolutely.
It's thinking of a solution.
Yeah.
Mm.
Don't confuse that with artistic expression, which is, I'm just seeing pinks and purples on the canvas. That's not creativity. That's expression.
Right.
Creativity is solving something.
Right.
It's using your brain to solve a problem.
Right.
Anyways. So yeah, lekker dudes.
Nice.
Rad.
Cool. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And hope we helped. Anyone browsing the shelves right now, you've got some good rainy day mooch.
Yeah.
All right, lekker guys.
Also, our home base is thevideostore.co.za. Please head over there if you want to find any older episodes, regular episodes, guest episodes, whatever you're looking for.
Right.
And give us a like, give us a thumbs up, a subscribe, a review, whatever's applicable on your platform of choice.
Cool.
And tell your friends about it. That's the best way to spread the word. Cool.
Thank you.
Okay.
See you soon.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.